The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So it seems like in the last few months there have been a couple of different people from different groups who've asked me the same question. This question, something along the lines of, so, you know, I can meditate when I'm sitting in silence and, you know, but how can I apply all of this when I'm out engaging in the world when things are going so fast? And so I thought I'd talk about that tonight. So I just want to start by kind of just highlighting some of the differences between our sitting practice and our practice in the world. You know, when we're sitting, we've got more space, more ability to let go of thoughts and ideas and emotions that come up. In fact, we're often told to let go of thoughts in particular. And this is actually one of the biggest places where daily life practice, you know, practice in the midst of our day and practice on the cushion are kind of different. Because when we're engaged in our lives, we have to think. You know, we can't just say, oh, there's a thought, let it go, you know. We have to think and engage and plan and connect with our world. We connect with content in our day-to-day lives, whereas we pretty much try to let go of that content when we are meditating. You know, if thoughts come up about friends or family or what we had for dinner, we let it go when we're sitting. But when we're in our daily lives, we need to think about what we're going to have for dinner. We need to think about who we're seeing tomorrow. So there's a fundamental difference, especially around the content. That's one big thing, one big difference. And then another big difference is that when we're sitting in silence, there's a lot more room for exploration. You know, we're not being... There's not a lot of stimulus. A lot of times we have our eyes closed, so we're not being bombarded by quite as much stuff as we are in the world. It's a lot different to pay attention to our emotions when we're sitting quietly with our eyes closed in stillness than it is to pay attention to our emotions when we're in the midst of a business meeting. So there's just some real fundamental differences between the two. So how do we make this leap? How do we, you know, how do we do this? It's challenging. It's not easy. So I'd like to give you an analogy. Just in reflecting on some kind of task or event or something that requires us to practice. You know, let's think about some kind of engaged kind of sport that requires us to practice. You know, like basketball. If you want to play basketball, you don't try to learn how to play basketball by starting out in the middle of a professional basketball game. You start by practicing by yourself, probably. You know, take a basketball, shoot some baskets, practice the moves, get yourself comfortable with the basketball and dribbling and running and dribbling still and shooting running. You practice it all by yourself first. And then after you've practiced some by yourself, then you have a friend come. And maybe you and your friends start practicing some specific moves. You practice some drills. And then maybe you bring in a team where you practice some specific formations and setups. So again, it's really, you know, it's really, I've seen basketball teams practice, and they do the same thing over and over again. They practice the same formations and same drills over and over again before they even do a practice game. And then they'll do a practice game with friendly teams before they go off and try to play with their rival teams. So there's a whole process of practice that's involved in training oneself for something as challenging as playing basketball in a college league or in a professional situation. And so it's kind of like that for us in our thinking about our moving our practice of mindfulness, of paying attention, from the practice of sitting in silence with our eyes closed and observing our bodies and observing our breath and observing our emotions and observing how our thoughts come and go, to being able to bring a level of mindfulness to a fast-moving, fast-paced encounter. So I want to just encourage you and to say it's a skill. This is a skill that we can learn. It's something that requires practice, and it is something that we can cultivate. But to expect that we can simply go from sitting in silence in meditation and learning about how to meditate in stillness to being able to be perfectly good at dealing with mindfulness in fast-moving encounters is a little bit, it's a little bit of a leap. You know, it's not something that's just going to happen automatically. So we need to practice. So there's two main areas, I think, that I think we need the most practice with. And one is around working with thoughts and speech in our daily life, because, you know, that's an area where we don't do a lot of practice in sitting meditation in the first place. You know, we don't do a lot of practice with what it means to be mindful while engaging with content of thought, because mostly we're trying to let go of thought in our sitting meditation. And we're not speaking in our sitting meditation, so we don't get any practice there either. So those are two huge areas where we need to find some kind of ways to practice. How do we practice working with thoughts in daily life? How do we practice working with speech in daily life? And the other main area I think that we need to explore is working with emotions, in our strong emotions in interaction in particular. When strong emotions come up in the midst of an interchange, how do we deal with that? How do we work with that? So I'd like to just explore a little bit about these tonight, how we can take some incremental steps to practice some skills that support us in learning how to move from the cushion to daily life, and also provide a few thoughts or suggestions for, you know, just how to be in the middle of the mess when it's just a mess. So to start with, if we follow or think about this basketball analogy, it's helpful to do some practice when you're alone. Practice in daily life when you're alone, when there's not so much charge happening. You know, when there's not particularly much going on, begin to see if you can pay attention to what's happening for you. What are the thoughts that are going through your mind? What are the emotions that are coming up? Pick times when, you know, it's not so challenging. You know, you're washing dishes. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be a lot of emotional reactivity to washing dishes. There may be impatience, there may be boredom. Those are great things to pay attention to. They're great tools, they're great places to practice for us. So starting by finding ways or places to find times that you can, when you're alone, connect with your experience. Stay connected. So with thoughts, there's a couple of kind of things we can explore in working with thoughts in our daily lives. You know, there's so many thoughts that go through our minds, many of them are not necessary. You know, we have a lot of fantasies, a lot of remembering. You know, how many of you have had the experience of thinking about something over and over and over and over and over and over again? You know, it's like, why does it do this? Why does the mind do this? It's not that we can necessarily just stop it, but we can at least begin to recognize, yeah, I thought I had this thought already. You know, I don't need to keep thinking this thought. Maybe I can put it aside. So there's a kind of three questions that we can ask ourselves about our thoughts. Are they necessary? Are they kind? Are they true? Just begin to check in and reflect on how what are your thoughts like? Are they kind? Are they necessary? The necessary one, there's so much of our thoughts, as I said, that are not necessary. There are many that are necessary. You know, the planning, the figuring out how we're going to get from A to B, work, there's all kinds of thoughts that are necessary. Begin to see when it leaps from the necessary to the unnecessary. When does it move to the repetitive? When does it move to a fantasy or a revisiting something from the past again and again and again? The truth of thoughts is another interesting thing to explore. You know, whether or not our thoughts are true, you know, sometimes we have opinions about things, and we kind of assume that we know what's going on, or we assume that we have a full picture. You know, like, we are looking at somebody doing something and judging them about what they're doing. And often in that kind of a scenario, we think we know their motivation, or we think we know why they're doing what they're doing. And we don't even question the truth of this. And we just kind of assume that we know. And so looking at your thoughts and checking in, are there assumptions under there? Now, sometimes our reactivity to things is based on assumptions that aren't true. So that's an interesting place to explore, to look at. Do we really know our thoughts are true or not? Now, in working with thoughts, you know, I'm not suggesting that we need to, you know, in daily life, we are not trying to necessarily just, you know, shove thoughts to the side. We need to look at, again, do we need these thoughts to engage? You know, do we need to be thinking these thoughts? So it's not that I'm saying we should not, you know, stop thinking. In fact, that's the opposite of what I'm saying. We really need to look and see, are these thoughts helping us or are they hurting us? Are they leading us in a direction that's helpful or a direction that's not helpful? That's a good way to look at the necessity of thoughts as well, you know, and the kindness of thoughts. Sometimes our thoughts lead to a sense of, you know, they're not so kind, they're not so friendly. And that they in turn then, because we are then not feeling so friendly, they in turn rebound on us and make us feel not so good. So just keeping that as a possibility. And in the exploration of this, you know, looking at this, starting from places where you're not in the challenging situations. You know, you can actually kind of be aware of what you're thinking while you're thinking it, and ask yourself these questions. Is this kind? Is this true? Is this necessary? When you're alone, this is not too hard to do when you're alone, if you can remember to do it. That's the hard part. That's really the hard part, remembering to do it. So picking some times or places perhaps to practice this. You know, picking a chore or picking, you know, driving to work when you've left yourself enough time so that you're not all frustrated about the traffic. You know, picking some times that aren't so charged and seeing, can I actually keep track of my thoughts and be aware of them? Can I check in with these questions? Are these true? Are these necessary? Are they kind? So in moving from sitting meditation to the full-on engagement in daily life, it's really helpful to begin with finding ways to practice in daily life when we are alone. So this is one thing I'm offering you, looking at thoughts, because I think thoughts is a big area of exploration, to begin to, can you be aware of what your thoughts are and recognize how they're impacting you? This is another way to explore thoughts in our daily life, not to just notice these thoughts and are they true, are they necessary, are they kind, but also to check in, how do these thoughts make me feel? So what's the emotional response I have from thinking these thoughts? So that's another exploration that we can make. Then on the other side, so that's a little bit about working with thoughts in a... So it's kind of like we start in a structured situation with practice in daily life. Picking something specific, okay, I'm going to, you know, do this while I'm doing chores, or, you know, picking some explicit times, making them practice times. And just like you sit down in meditation and make it a practice, see if you can pick, you know, a 5-minute chunk of time during the day, brushing your teeth or making your bed or something, to just explore what does it mean to be aware in my daily life. And then on the side of looking at the kind of emotional stuff that comes up. Again, it's helpful to begin to explore this kind of stuff in daily life first when you are alone, you know, when you are not right in the midst of situations. So, you know, we all have various habits. We all have various patterns that we're familiar with, often ones that make us, you know, struggle, frustrated, impatient, angry, irritated, whatever. We all have patterns that we, over and over, find ourselves stuck in the same kind of patterns. And so I'd like to suggest that if you have a pattern like that you're familiar with, and you're interested in exploring it, actually I think interest is really helpful here, to have an interest in exploring a pattern like this will really aid in the exploration. It'll support your being mindful if you have an interest in exploring a pattern. So picking a pattern first, perhaps, that you notice, you know, for instance, impatience or perhaps procrastination or something that tends to come up for you when you're alone. You know, a particular pattern that comes up when you're alone. Not one that, you know, you tend to, you know, the hardest thing that you, you know, deal with, you know, that you get angry with your boss in the middle of a busy meeting. You know, that may be not the easiest place to begin. So picking a pattern that comes up for you often when you're alone. Now, the first time I tried this, it was a very strong emotion for me. It was anger. And it was coming up when I was alone because it was anger at a person who was no longer in my vicinity, But it was thoughts that were creating the anger. You know, I was not, I hadn't seen him for months, this person, but I would think these thoughts and I would just whip myself up into this anger. So it was coming up for me when I was, you know, in very, you know, kind of neutral times. It's like the mind is kind of in a very neutral space, and then a thought appears and there's not much else going on. So what does the mind do? It decides to, oh, well, there's not much going on. Let's whip up this anger. So it would, that would come up for me a lot when I was alone. And so I picked that because it was really something I was really interested in understanding. And it was, you know, it wasn't too hard to connect with because it wasn't in a very interactive situation. So I began just, you know, noticing when is this anger here? You know, what's happening for me? So I'd suggest that that's another kind of stepping stone on the way to being able to be mindful and aware in the middle of the whole mess. By picking something to, you know, begin to engage with that happens for you when you're alone. Now, in that process of exploring that thing, so you're alone, so you have perhaps a little more time. I mean, it may be that you're alone at work and you're, you know, in the middle of doing things. In fact, this was my situation. You know, I would be typing away at my computer, and then I would find myself just kind of frozen at the computer because I was lost in my anger. And then I would wake up and it's like, oh yeah, I said I was going to be mindful of this. And it didn't feel very good. You know, it wasn't easy to turn towards it. But, you know, I just, you know, just recognize, oh yeah, okay, so there's anger happening. And, oh, yuck, it feels yucky. That's about all I could do with it in the midst of my day. So the other key, I think, with practice in daily life is not trying to stop everything and, you know, say, okay, here's this anger. What does it feel like in my body? Where is it? You know, how? What kinds of thoughts are, you know, it's like we don't have time to do that in the midst of our daily lives. But we do have time to take it in. Yes, this is anger. Yes, this is frustration or depression or irritation or whatever. Boredom or impatience or whatever it is. That's what's happening right now. And just a kind of sense of it, yuck, or, you know, tightness or tension or, and then see if you can just go on with your day. You know, I find that practice in daily life works best when we don't have a big agenda around trying to do something with it. You know, it's more like just, here it is, okay, this is what it's like to be angry. And then go on with your day. Just keep doing whatever it is that you're doing. So that it doesn't have to feel like it's a burden. I think this is a big piece in making the leap to practice in daily life. You know, in our sitting practice, if an emotion comes up, we can really take time with it. You know, we can sit there and feel it and allow it to shift and change and notice the thoughts and let go of the thoughts and come back to the feeling. We don't really have that time so much in our daily lives. Often we're in the midst of doing things and we can't stop what we're doing to sit down and say, oh, let me look at this. So it's kind of like, look at what's obvious. What's obvious about this experience? Do the best you can with noticing it and just keep going with your day. What seems to happen is that over the course of time, you know, for me at least, it's important to have a kind of a resolve to keep paying attention to that thing. You know, every time you notice that you've not noticed it, I'm just going to try again. Just keep trying, just over and over again, keep trying to remember. It's not a failure when you notice that you've forgotten. It's actually an indication that you've remembered. I mean, it's just like waking up in sitting meditation and noticing that you've not been paying attention to the breath. It's just like that. You wake up in your day, it's like, oh yeah, I said I was going to pay attention to that, and I've been forgetting to do that. At that moment, just resolve to keep trying. That resolve is really powerful. So resolve and patience. It's really hard. This is really hard. It's a hard practice. But it is doable, and it is really, really helpful. Because as we do, we start bringing our attention to these challenges in our daily lives, as we start bringing our attention to our struggles, our, you know, these afflictive emotions, these challenging emotions, we begin to see that with the mindfulness, there can be a little more space around them. It's not so much getting caught in them, not so much getting lost utterly. In my own practice with this anger, I found over the course of months, just resolving, you know, over and over again, yep, I'm just going to keep paying attention to this, just going to keep trying. Now, each time I noticed the anger, I got a little bit more, you know, a little bit more understanding about the anger. And this is not something that was conscious, really. It was just more, oh yeah, this is what it's like to be angry. And, you know, that understanding of what that anger was actually manifested by the mindfulness actually recognizing that I was getting angry much earlier in the process. So that, you know, I wasn't whipped out of shape and non-functional, you know, frozen at the keyboard. It's like I was noticing it beginning. So this kind of thing begins to happen for us. The repeated observation around a pattern begins to educate our minds about it. It begins to wake us up around it a little bit more easily. So I encourage you to play with this. And again, it's just, you know, noticing what's obvious about it. You know, it doesn't have to be a big, heavy thing. In fact, if it becomes a heavy thing, you'll probably stop doing it. So that's something I really emphasize in daily life practice, is the lightness, the light touch. So exploring emotions in your life, in times when you're alone, but in the midst of doing things. Again, not to necessarily try to stop what you're doing, just what can you notice about a challenging emotion while you're engaged in grocery shopping, or while you're engaged in walking the dog, or whatever. Just what can you notice while you're in the middle of that activity? And then a kind of a next step, perhaps, in moving into engagement might be to pick a friend who's interested in this same kind of exploration and consciously practice together, you know, particularly around thoughts and speech. Consciously pick a time, pick a friend and go set a date, a mindful lunch date, where you decide that you're going to speak mindfully to each other. And a good topic, somebody actually asked me, well, what do you talk about? A good topic would be talking about mindfulness. Because when you're talking about mindfulness, that's actually the easiest topic to remember to be mindful for. If you're talking about being mindful, you can more easily remember. So again, you know, structuring things so that it makes it easier for you. You know, now we're kind of talking about these drills, right? You know, the drills that the basketball teams work. We do something a little structured. Go out to lunch with a friend and talk about mindfulness, trying to be mindful. See if you can insert a pause before you speak, so that you can recognize what thoughts are coming up, so that you know what you're going to say before you say it. You may have a chance to observe why you're going to say something before you say it. So, you know, I'll give you a little story of, you know, a time I tried this with a friend. I think the first time we tried this, we went out for a lunch date, just like I described, and we were sitting there having lunch, and I watched a thought come up, and I, you know, is this true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? It's like, No, shouldn't say that one. And another thought comes up. No, shouldn't say that one. And I sat there for a little while, and well, he was sitting there too, so he wasn't saying anything either. But but at some point I had to say, you know, I'm just sitting here ruling out things to say. And, you know, there began our conversation, you know, that this is hard, you know. There's a lot of stuff that comes up in our minds that we want to say and engage in that's not so helpful. So, you know, picking some structure, doing some structured conversations with friends. Seeing if you can be mindful while speaking as well. Another very challenging time to be mindful in our daily lives. But again, you know, if you have some structured times, now this is, I can't emphasize this enough, you know, we do practice meditation and awareness in silence all the time. And the reason why it's so hard to move it into speaking is because we don't practice it. So finding ways to practice that, you know, practice with friends that know what you're doing when you don't speak for 2 minutes so that it doesn't feel so awkward. And then you might, after you've done that a few times with a friend or two, you know, find the same group of friends. Okay, now let's go out and let's not do it so structured. Let's not just stick to, you know, the topic of mindfulness. Let's see what happens if we try to just have a normal conversation and try to be mindful. You know, not necessarily inserting the conscious pause, but then maybe checking in every 10 minutes or so. So how's it going? You know, are you forgetting? Are you remembering? You know, just again, just creativity in daily life practice. This is another thing that I really like to emphasize because, you know, there's not a lot of formal practices out there for moving things into daily life. I've created a whole bunch of things and I teach about them, but they've all just come up out of my own mind. You know, I just created them. So creativity, exploring, you know, for yourself, what might support you? What would be helpful for you to learn how to practice in daily life? But again, I think using this basketball model is really helpful. You know, we can't just expect to be able to leap into the most difficult situation and be mindful without some practice. Let's see, is there anything more? Well, I have more I could say, but let's see if there's any questions or comments.
Well, we're struggling with living with a really difficult person in our house. And it's so hard to be in our house with this person who is always challenging us, trying to pick a fight. I've really been struggling with trying to maintain a sense of calm, to create some space before I answer, not to engage in a heated conversation. And I've been trying to practice on things like store clerks and, you know, easy situations.
Good.
So that I have something when I get home. But still, I find that I lose my balance really, really easily in my house, which is scary.
Well, you're right in the middle of a difficult situation. I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing that's really hard. I mean, it is. It's really hard. So in this kind of situation, we, you know, we do all the other practices. I mean, it's not like our lives are going to be on hold, you know. In the basketball analogy, you cannot go into the middle of an NBA game, you know. You don't have to put yourself there. You can practice and then decide, am I ready? No, I don't think so. You know, we don't get that option in our daily lives. We are just in the middle of it. We're in the middle of the mess. And how do we do this? So we do practice. And then this is actually a great piece to bring in. You know, when we're in the middle of something really challenging, how do we deal with that? And, you know, part of that is simply, you know, just do the best you can. Know this is really hard. Be really compassionate for yourself for how hard it is. Forgive yourself for making mistakes. And, you know, just notice what you can. Notice whatever you can about that situation. You know, tension, tightness, contraction, blurting things out that you don't want, that you wish you hadn't said. The other thing that's helpful with this kind of thing is, you know, get good at cleaning up the mess. You know, that's actually, that's part of the practice. You know, if you say things that you regret in situations, you know, I've seen myself in doing something that I wish I hadn't done. I'll spend a lot of time, you know, I have spent a lot of time trying to figure out some way to make that thing be okay. You know, I didn't want to do it. I knew it was not a good thing. But somehow the mind just wants to rearrange the past to have make that thing okay. And I spend a lot of time trying to do that until I finally realize, no, it's not okay. So, you know, the kind of willingness to admit, yeah, that wasn't so good. You know, I apologize. You know, that just that can be a really good practice as well. So yeah, it's not easy. It is really not easy. And we do just have to, you know, do the best we can when we're in the midst of it. Let me see. Oh, there's one other thing you can play with, though, that I'll offer. So sometimes with something challenging like that, it can be helpful or interesting to reflect on it later when you're alone. And it's almost like replaying it. And then give yourself an opportunity to feel what happens as you replay it. So, for instance, and just to give you a sense of how this works. So right now in your mind, call up a memory of meeting a friend that you really enjoy. You know, just the sense of that, you know, a friend that you know, have a, you know, maybe a friend you haven't seen for a long time, a dear friend where there's a lot of, you know, connection and love between you. And so in that, calling that up right now, what happens in your body? You know, what do you feel? How does that impact you now? Not to proliferate on that thought, but just to kind of notice, how does it impact you now to call up that memory? Now you can do something similar with a difficulty. I'll just put this out for you. So call to mind something that you've struggled with in the last few days. Just bring to mind the situation, just an image of it perhaps, or a few thoughts about it. Not to think about it more than that. Just that's enough to call it to mind. And then let go of that. How do you feel now? So that you can begin to explore the feelings a little bit here and now, when you've got a little more space and time. And now, so that I'm not leaving you in that space, just let that go. And and now, you know, I'm just going to offer you, just allow the word ease to come into your mind and see how just that word ease impacts you right now. So thoughts are pretty powerful, actually. You've just seen a demonstration of that, most of you, I think. That the thoughts that come into our mind have the power to influence our experience here and now. And we can use that as a way to explore difficulty when you've got a little more time and a little more space. So I'd suggest you might find, pick a time, before you go to bed, or, a time when you have some time. Let yourself settle in meditation, and then bring up a situation with this person in your mind. Just one, for just, a couple seconds, then let it go. And what are you feeling? How does that impact you? And can you turn towards those feelings and not push them away, not think they're wrong, not think they're bad, not think there's any problem with them? Kind of get familiar with the being with them. In that familiarity, you may find over time that as it comes up in the situation, you have a little more ease, a little more space around those feelings. Those are just a few thoughts. Did you have something, Abraham?
About a month or two ago, Gil had a talk here, and he was talking about anger and exploring emotions underneath anger, and he was suggesting that there was fear and hurt and I can't remember the third one. But anyway, I started exploring with some of that, and it became apparent to me that in the workplace I could find out where I was feeling fear in my body, and that I had become unused to acknowledging that in the marketplace, in the workplace, because we're so busy, we're doing stuff, we're just rushing on to the next thing. But to take a moment and see where I feel it in my body. And that was really interesting to start to explore, and I'm still doing that. So what you're talking about kind of is, I think, in the same vein. But it's really crucial for me not to push away some of that experience.
Absolutely.
So easy to start doing that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, what I talked about when I said, just move on, is not the pushing away. Actually, in my own experience, what I found was that when I woke up into the midst of the anger, and it's like, oh, wow, look at this. What do I do with this? This doesn't feel very good. Just the acknowledgement of, oh yeah, this is anger, somehow added a little bit of space so that I could move on, and I, without repressing it, without trying to stop it or stuff it down. So it's really important, I think, especially in the exploration in daily life, to not think we have to stop them. I mean, there one good practice, and here's another good practice for you. Is when you're feeling difficult emotions, if you can, I mean, this can be challenging, but it can be a good one to play with. When you're feeling a difficult emotion, kind of not repressing that feeling, but also seeing if you cannot have it leak out into your behavior. That I found to be incredibly powerful. So that there's not a repression of the feeling. The feeling is, it's clear that feeling is there. But you're also, kind of engaging with it in a way that it's like, okay, and it's almost like, for me, it's like a gentleness of body when I feel something that feels kind of agitated or violent. It's like, okay, there's that strong feeling, but I'm going to kind of just be a little calm and slow in my movements here. That has been really powerful for me as a way to navigate that. How do I not act on this and not repress it? So it's almost like, being an actor. It's like, there's this feeling, but I'm doing something else right now. So how do I let this not leak out into my actions? So that's been something that's been helpful. The other thing you point to, though, is, seeing at times the exploration around our emotions begins to point to, like you're saying, the things that are underneath it, the layers that are underneath it. Now, I generally don't suggest that people dig to try to find things that are underneath. But what I found is the exploration, the kind of repeated exploration around a pattern, begins to reveal for you what is underneath. And then when you see that, like you've seen for yourself a lot of fear under the anger, when you begin to check in, you know, the fear becomes what we then start to recognize. Because in noticing the fear, it doesn't have to move to the anger. So that kind of seeing of some of the layers of our difficult emotions, that's also something that starts to happen as we explore these patterns. You know, we start to see what lies underneath them. So thank you. Yeah. You bring the mic up.
I just wanted to share a little a practice I found by accident with...
Great.
Yeah. Having very small, you know, young children, so you're talking about living with difficult people. with my meditation practice, I have to get up really, really early to ensure that I get time to practice in quiet. And so I would find that if the children got up earlier or I chose to sleep in, I would get really upset and sometimes abandon the practice, sometimes just be really irritated that all these noises are now going on. What happened, though, over time is that my wife would be with the kids and I would continue my practice and really sit there and observe all the reactions that I normally would have in the situation.
Uh-huh.
That I could sit there and just watch and really just like, just so often wanting to spring off the cushion just to go handle something when I knew someone else was addressing the situation.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have to, but it was just really amazing and enlightening to...
So rather than trying to say, it's supposed to be calm and quiet and I'm supposed to be paying attention to my breathing here and it's not supposed to be like that,
right.
Embracing the mess.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, and it's taught me a lot about myself. It continues to teach me a lot.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, embracing the mess is always good. Well, I have a couple other thoughts I can offer you. Things that I found helpful in noticing patterns like this. I think one of the, well, there's two main pieces I'll offer. One is that when you're recognizing, you know, a pattern, noticing it come up over and over again. Notice if there's any resistance to that pattern, any aversion to that pattern. Often when we start to recognize that we're repeating our habits, when we're not wanting to do that over, you know, it's like, yeah, I see this pattern. And, you know, I'd stop it if I could, but I don't seem to have that power to just stop it. We can get annoyed with ourselves, we can get frustrated with ourselves, we can resist the pattern. So if you're noticing any resistance or any aversion, allow that to be part of what you pay attention to. Don't resist the resistance. Don't get averse to the aversion. You know, it's like it's kind of like we have to allow our space to get a little bigger and take in, okay, yep, this impatience is happening and I don't like it. You know, actually, at one point I was looking at impatience and I'd been looking at, you know, because I knew it was a pattern that I was really, I had a lot of it. And when I started, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to look at this impatience. It was everywhere. I mean, brushing my teeth, I'm impatient. It's like, this isn't worth my time. I've got much better things to do than brush my teeth. It was everywhere. And one day I was walking down the sidewalk and some impatience came up about something or other. And the next thought that went through my mind was, I've been looking at this impatience for 2 months now. And I just had to laugh. You know, it's like impatience and impatience. I caught it. I mean, I caught that thought. So, you know, if you can actually recognize and allow your awareness to take that in also, oh, yeah, I'm impatient about impatience. Okay. It can just make things a little lighter. So recognize it. Allow yourself to acknowledge when there is some kind of resistance or aversion to these patterns. And again, not trying to push it away. This is opening too. We just have to keep opening, 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 opening to whatever is happening. The other piece that I found very helpful, particularly with patterns that seem to come up a lot, is to notice when they're not coming up. Notice when they're absent. Just take it in that impatience is not happening right now. What I've seen, at least in my own experience, is that there's certain patterns that we have that are so common and so frequent that we really think there's a solidity to them, almost. It's like, you know, if they're not present now, it's like, well, yeah, I know it's not there now, but I know that really that's what I am. I'm impatient, you know. So, you know, we can solidify them and turn them into a kind of an identity and assume they're kind of there all the time, even when they're not there. And so when we actually can acknowledge, oh, yeah, it's not here right now, it helps to poke holes in the identification that happens around it. You know, this is me. This is who I am. This impatient person, this miserable person, this angry person. Well, here I am. I'm not angry right now. I'm not miserable right now. It's really powerful. That's an incredibly powerful practice. So I encourage you to explore that one too. And last thing I'll say is that I often teach twice a year. I teach a retreat. A daily life practice retreat. I know some of you have done this, some of you have heard about it, but it's a week-long non-residential retreat where I offer a bunch of tools for learning how to bring this practice into daily life. And we meet on Sunday afternoon for about 4 hours and go through a lot of instructions. And then I'm here every morning and every evening during that week to have discussion with you about what's happening for you in your daily life practice. I'd like to encourage people to come as much as they can during the week, but, you know, I know your lives are busy, so. And then there's a day long at the end of the week. So it's kind of like we bracket the week, every day and the week, with formal practice and discussion around practice in daily life. The next one that I'm doing is August 21 through 27th. So that's coming up pretty soon. So I do it about every 6 months. So I just like to let people know when it's happening. Yeah.
Just so you know, I think you call it the householder retreat.
I used to call it the householder retreat. I now call it the daily life practice retreat. It's undergone three names. It was first called the sandwich retreat, and people got confused about that, thinking it meant bring a brown lunch. Brown bag lunch. And then the householder retreat. I called it householder because that's a term used in the suttas. The Buddha refers to lay practitioners as householders. But then people thought that meant something about owning a house. And so I just decided to call it what it is, the daily life practice retreat. So I'll be away for the next 2 weeks. Carolyn Dilley will be here for the next 2 weeks. She's a wonderful teacher from Santa Cruz, so I'm sure she'll be talking about some wonderful things for you. So I'll see you in about 3 weeks.